Welcome back to the North Carolina Reading Service. Your readers today are
Judith Dykstar
and Karen Edwards. We'll begin the second hour of news from the News and Observer, the New Bern Sun Journal, the Greenville Daily Reflector, and the Wilmington Star News. And now let's start with the TV listings for this evening.
And for this evening, ABC is starting their 8 o'clock hour with Shark Tank. That'll go for 1 hour up until 9. And 9 to 11 will be 2020. Unfortunately, no description is provided, so you'll have to tune in to see what they're all about. CBS starts at 8 o'clock with Hollywood Squares. That'll go until 9. SWAT takes up the 9 to 10 hour, and 10 to 11 is Fire Country. Fox starts at 8 o'clock with United Football League, D.C. Defenders at San Antonio Brahmas from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. NBC starts at 8 o'clock tonight with Gross Point. That'll go for an hour, and that'll be from 9 to 11 will be Dateline. ION is airing 3 one-hour episodes of Magnum, beginning at 8, ending at 11. PBS is airing Washington Week with The Atlantic from 8 to 8:30, 8:30 to 9, State Lines, and 9 to 11, Great Performances. MNT starts at 8 o'clock with Dateline, and that'll go until 9. 9 to 10, Chicago Fire, and then an additional Chicago Fire from 10 to 11. CW is airing Penn and Teller from 8 to 9, and then Masters of Illusion, 2 one-half-hour episodes from 9 to 10, followed by the National News Desk, and it'll bring it up to 11. A&E starts at 8 o'clock with the first 48. That'll bring it up to 9 o'clock, and then from 9 to 11, 2 one-hour episodes of the first 48. AMC is airing the movie Back to the Future, and that'll start at 8 o'clock, ending at 10:30, and then they're going to be airing Back to the Future Part 2. BET is airing the movie Stay Out. That's going to start early at 7 o'clock, and that'll take it up until 9:30, where they'll be airing the movie Sisters, beginning at 9:30, and looks like it'll last until 11:30. Disney is airing Percy Jackson, beginning at 7:50, actually, it says here, and it's going to take it up until 8:30 when they'll pick up 2 half-hour episodes of Place. At 9:30, they'll be airing Ladybug, and at 10 o'clock, an additional Ladybug, and they'll end their broadcasting with Big City starting at 10:30. The Discovery Channel is airing Gold Rush White Water from 8 until 9, and then 9 until 11, it's an additional Gold Rush, but it's going to go right up until 11. ESPN is airing NBA basketball, Cleveland Cavaliers at Indiana Pacers. That'll take it up to 10 o'clock, and then it says here Oklahoma City Thunder at Denver Nuggets from 10 o'clock on. Nick is airing Hotel Transylvania, the movie, from 8 to 10, and then at 10 they'll be airing Friends, 2 one-half-hour episodes that'll bring it to 11. TNT starting early tonight at 7 o'clock with NHL Hockey, Toronto Maple Leafs at Florida Panthers Eastern, taking it up to 9:30, and then at 9:30 Dallas Stars at Winnipeg for the rest of their broadcast tonight. And then finally, USA is airing WWW Friday Night SmackDown, beginning at 8 o'clock and ending at 11. And those are our TV listings for tonight.
Thank you. Now we'll do the announcements. Local plays with audio description in Raleigh on Sunday, May 11th, Schoolhouse Rock Live, Jr., 3 p.m., Raleigh Little Theater, that's at 301 Polk Street in Raleigh. 919-821-3111, and you can get a free ticket for your driver. Be sure and ask. In Greensboro, on Saturday, May 10th, we have Back to the Future at 2 p.m., and Sunday, we have Back to the Future at 1 p.m. at the Tanger Center, 300 North Elm Street in Greensboro. The phone number for that is 336-333-6500. This from Disability Rights North Carolina, DRNC. Our work is threatened. Can we count on you so our community can continue to count on us? Did you know this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Protection and Advocacy P&A Network? As North Carolina's designated P&A, Disability Rights North Carolina has proudly carried out our federally mandated mission, protecting and advocating for the rights of people with disabilities across our state. Funding cuts threaten the services and protections we provide to individuals with disabilities and those who love and care for them. This isn't just a budget line. This is about real people losing access to education, health care, safe housing, and the support they need to live with dignity and independence. We're proud of what we have accomplished, but we cannot continue this work without your support. We urge you to act now to protect the rights and safety of disabled North Carolinians. Today, we've built something powerful over the last 50 years. Let's make sure it lasts for the next 50 and beyond. To find out how you can help, go to disabilitierightsnc.org/take-action. Tactile tours are available at the North Carolina Museum of Art. These tours are designed for visitors who are blind or have low vision. These docent-led tours explore the museum's collection through audio description, tactile experiences, and by engaging the senses. Tours are available by request only. You must arrange them at least 2 weeks in advance. To schedule a tactile tour, please contact Accessibility Coordinator Molly Hull at mhull@ncartmuseum.org, or you can call 919-664-6854. Have you gotten your free currency reader yet? The Department of the Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing is now providing a free currency reader to all eligible blind or visually impaired individuals. The device is small, compact, and runs on a AAA battery, which is included. To use the currency reader, you simply insert a U.S. bill into the reader and press the button. The device will tell the note's denomination. To request your currency reader, fill out an application form, which is available to download at www.bep.gov. It must be signed by a competent authority, such as a doctor, who can certify your eligibility. Then simply mail it to the address on the application. Once your application is verified, a reader will be mailed to you at no charge. For more information about the U.S. Currency Reader Program, visit www.bep.gov, or you can call toll-free 844-815-9388. You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, connecting people who are blind and print impaired to each other, their families, and communities by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. In addition to using specially tuned sub-channel radio receivers, NCRS streams our programming on our website at ncreadingservice.org. Listen by using the Listen Live streaming audio player, located at the upper right-hand corner of our website pages. If you have an assistive technology device, such as Alexa or Google Home, just say, "Tune in, NC Reading Service," to listen instantly. We also provide podcasts of over 50 magazines and other information and entertainment programs following the initial broadcast. Please visit our website, ncreadingservice.org, and click on Skip to Podcast section. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Judith?
And next up from the NNO, this headline reads, Wake Schools Warn Against New TikTok Challenge, Making Computers Smoke. Wake County and school systems across the county are sending out warnings about a new TikTok challenge that has students setting their laptop computers on fire. In a message posted Thursday on Wake's website, the district says some students across the country have been participating in a challenge that involves intentionally damaging school-issued Chromebooks to make them smoke. Wake says some incidents have already been reported in district schools. Specifically, students are inserting items such as pencil lead, push pins, gum wrappers, or paper clips into the Chromebook's USB port to intentionally short-circuit the device, Wake said. This can cause the Chromebook to emit smoke, catch fire, damage electrical outlets, or even electrocute the students. Similar messages are being sent by school districts across the U.S. to warn about what's being called the Chromebook Challenge. Schools have dealt with multiple destructive TikTok challenges over the years, including slapping teachers and vandalizing school bathrooms. A bill passed this week by the State House would ban TikTok from being accessed on school district devices. Disciplinary action and criminal charges possible. Wake warns that trying to short-circuit a Chromebook is extremely dangerous, poses serious safety risks, and is a direct violation of both school policy and state law. Intentionally damaging school property or creating unsafe conditions is a serious offense and may result in disciplinary action at school, as well as legal consequences under North Carolina law, the district said in its message. Such actions can also lead to criminal charges, depending on the severity of the incident and the risk posed to others. Some Connecticut schools have had to be evacuated due to smoke filling the classrooms from Chromebooks damaged by students, NBC Connecticut reported. Wake is asking parents to monitor their children's use of their school-issued Chromebook at home and to speak to their children about the risks and consequences of participating in dangerous social media trends. Schools don't have money to replace Chromebooks. Wake County, like school districts across the country, issued laptops for students to use at home during the pandemic. Laptops are now used on a regular basis in class and at home. Schools used federal COVID aid to provide students with Chromebooks and other personal devices. But with the federal COVID dollars gone, a state report shows 82 of 115 school districts and 101 of 221 charter schools, laboratory schools, and regional schools can't afford new devices. Wake is among the districts that told the state it doesn't have enough money to replace all its aging devices. According to the state, it would cost $160 million a year at $400 per device to enable schools across North Carolina to provide new devices every 4 years.
Cary voters rejected a new stadium. What happens to the $75 million promised for it? Cary voters rejected plans to build a 4,000-seat indoor stadium and sports complex. The town planned to spend $75 million in county tourism money and more than half of a $560 million Cary Parks bond on the ballot last fall to pay for the project. Now those plans have stalled. Voters rejected the bond 55-45%, and town leaders want the tourism money to go to the Wake Med Soccer Park instead. With the failed bond and the sports center not coming on, there were discussions, and Wake Med really seemed to fill the bill. And so now we'll find out if Wake County and others agree, said John Collins, Carrie's Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Resources Director. Carrietown Manager Sean Stiegel sent a letter to Wake County requesting the change. The Wake County Board of Commissioners and the Raleigh City Council decide how tourism money is spent. Wake County taxes the sale of prepared food and beverages and hotel stays. That money can only be used to promote and support tourism. The $300 million renovation of the Lenovo Center and $355 million to expand the Raleigh Convention Center were two of the largest projects approved for tourism money in 2023. Another $75 million was also designated for an indoor sports facility. A 10-year tourism plan for Wake County, released in 2018, included an indoor multi-sport complex that would elevate Wake County's profile as a competitive sport tourism destination. Cary was the only entity to submit a proposal for it in 2019. Scott Dupree, executive director of the Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance, declined to be interviewed but said in a statement there is still a need for the indoor complex. However, in order to get that kind of venue moving forward again, there would need to be a new request for a proposal process to determine if there are any municipalities and or private investors interested in developing such a facility, he said. Whether it will be used for upgrades to the Wake Med Soccer Park or another tourism-related project will ultimately be decided by the city and county, he continued. I'm sure there are additional projects that would also like to receive funding consideration as well. That city and county discussion will likely happen later this year. Wake Med Soccer Park opened in 2002 on state-owned land, with the town of Cary responsible for maintenance and operations. The last major expansion was to bring the stadium to 10,000 seats in 2012. Wake Med drives a ton of economic development, Collins said. We have a good variety, everything from the host for two professional soccer teams all the way down to hosting local high school football and local youth practices out there, as well as cross-country meets and NCAA soccer lacrosse. So it's a really versatile facility that we leverage in a lot of unique ways. There's a lot the town could do in uplifting and rehabbing the park, he said. The bones are good. Collins said, we need a little more indoor space. We need some improved media spaces. We need some improved seats. But the basics of it are really good. Collins agreed that the area would benefit from an indoor stadium like the one Cary wanted to build. We took our shot at it, he said. I don't think it was the right time for us, clearly, because that's what our citizens told us when they voted on the bond. Last year's bond failed. Was one of five bonds that failed across the state in 2024. Three occurred in Wake County. Voters rarely reject bonds. A blog post from the UNC School of Government found 202 out of 213 bonds, 94.8%, were approved by North Carolina voters between 2012 to 2022. In 2023, the $60 million Fuquay Varina Parks and Recreation Bond was the only bond in North Carolina to fail.
Next up from the NNO is this headline, Durham's newest 27-story skyscraper is ready for pre-leasing. Here's a first look. Prospective renters can now call dibs on apartments inside Durham's newest 27-story skyscraper. Durham-based Austin Lawrence Partners ALP began pre-leasing 188 rental units this week for the Novus, a glassy high-rise at 400 West Main Street in Durham's Five Points District. The site backs up against the downtown loop in one of the city's most bustling commercial corridors. Among the amenities, putting greens and golf simulators, spaces to work remotely, a pickleball court, an outdoor movie theater, a dog park, pools, hot tubs, and a steam room. On the 28th floor, residents also have access to a sky lounge and club room. The Novus fills a gap in the market for rentals that raise the bar in luxury urban living, said Jane Hills, ALP co-founder, in a release. It's the city's second 27-story building downtown. ALP also built the first, One City Center, in 2018. That's about the limit under the downtown 300-foot height limit. It's also part of a wave of new construction hitting the market amid a post-pandemic construction boom. It replaces the South Bank building that stood on the site for nearly 50 years before being demolished in 2022. Offerings include studio, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom apartments, ranging from 512 square feet to 1,305 square feet. Prices start from $2,080 per month for studios, $2,580 per month for one-bedroom, and $3,980 per month for two-bedrooms, according to its website. First move-ins are scheduled for this summer. The building also includes 54 luxury condominiums and 22,000 square feet of ground floor retail. To date, 46 of the 54 available condos have been sold, the firm said. Online listings show many units still available with prices starting at $919,900. The priciest is listed all at over $4 million. Three retail tenants have been lined up to open this summer. Revel, a locally owned cycling studio, the Pilates studio Solid Core, and Dose Yoga and Smoothie Bar. Additional retail leasing is underway, the firm said. We've put our heart and soul into the Novus completion, Hills added. We truly believe it is unlike anything this region has seen. Jane and Greg Hills, the husband and wife team behind ALP, began investing in Durham in 2011. Greg Hills graduated from Duke University in 1976. In addition to the Novus and One City Center, their firm is also behind the Unscripted Hotel Durham, revamping one of the city's most iconic buildings, the former Jack Tor Motel.
This also from the News and Observer. NCDOT resurrects plans to widen Aviation Parkway in Morrisville. Aviation Parkway, the mostly two-lane road that connects Interstate 40 with the heart of Morrisville, has changed little since the town was a rural crossroads with a couple hundred residents. Now, Morrisville is a fast-growing suburb of more than 32,000, and the state is dusting off a stalled project to widen Aviation Parkway. The North Carolina Department of Transportation will present plans to expand the road to four lanes at a public meeting at Morrisville Town Hall on Monday evening. NCDOT will overhaul 2.4 miles of Aviation Parkway between I-40 and NC-54 Chapel Hill Road. It plans to separate the two sides of the roads with turn lanes or a grassy median, with a 5-foot-wide sidewalk on the north side and a 10-foot multi-use path on the south. Where Aviation Parkway crosses Lake Crabtree, the median will become narrower, replaced by wider paved shoulders. The causeway over the lake will need to be widened to make room for the wider road, which will include a multi-use path separated by a guardrail. NCDOT also plans to reconfigure the intersection of Aviation and NC-54 to eliminate left turns. Drivers wishing to turn left onto either road will use a new loop road in the northwest corner of the intersection, which will have traffic lights at both ends. Without left turns, traffic should flow more smoothly with fewer crashes, particularly when the roads are busy, according to NCDOT's engineers. Planning for the Aviation Parkway project goes back to 2015. NCDOT had drafted initial designs and done environmental studies before presenting the results at a public meeting in June of 2019. But then NCDOT ran into financial problems that forced it to delay dozens of projects statewide, including Aviation Parkway. Planning work resumed in 2023. Completion is still a ways off, though. NCDOT expects to begin acquiring right-of-way next year, but not begin construction until the summer of 2029. Inflation, especially acute in the construction business, has driven up the cost. In 2019, NCDOT expected to spend $28.8 million on the project. Now the estimate is more than $57 million. Monday's open house will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. at Morrisville Town Hall, 100 Town Hall Drive. There will be no formal presentation, and people are free to come and go as they wish. For more information or to comment on NCDOT's plans, you can go to publicinput.com/4203. That's publicinput.com/4203. Judith?
And this next article from the NNO has a headline, Two North Carolina Brunch Spots Rank Among Nation's Best, Why Fans Love Them. If you're searching for a new favorite brunch spot, two North Carolina restaurants may have you covered. Herons in Cary opens the O. Henry Hotel in Greensboro on a list of the top 100 brunch restaurants in America, according to results published April 22nd. To determine the nation's best places for brunch, the restaurant reservation website OpenTable said it studied more than 10 million reviews that verified customers left online in the year leading up to February 28th. The website considered whether restaurants across the country received brunch-related feedback and whether they offered Sunday brunch. The results were released before Mother's Day, which falls this year on Sunday, May 11th. OpenTable said a survey of more than 1,500 people found 73% of moms want a family brunch to mark the occasion, according to a news release. Why the NC brunch spots are fan favorites? While Mother's Day is a popular time for brunch, fans have shared their love for Herons and the O. Henry Hotel month after month. The two North Carolina destinations also earned spots on the Open Table list last year, McClatchy News reported. This time around, Herons made it into the rankings after some customers went on Open Table to rave about the setting and the customer service. The restaurant at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, just west of Raleigh, offers pancakes, omelets, and other brunch classics on its menu. The intimate 98-seat dining room features a full-view kitchen, a meticulously curated private art collection, and floor-to-ceiling window views of the surrounding gardens and grounds, Herons wrote on its website. After receiving a nod, was the O. Henry Hotel in Greensboro. The destination was honored for its afternoon tea experience, which features traditional scones, savory finger sandwiches, and sweet treats, according to its website. The O. Henry Hotel sometimes hosts special afternoon teas with themes such as the Mad Hatter or the Nutcracker. On Open Table, the restaurant received several high scores for its food and midday ambiance. The results were released after Yelp published a similar list of the best brunch restaurants in each state. The review website said the number one place to eat brunch in North Carolina was Young Cardinal Cafe and Company in Winston-Salem. On its more recent list, Open Table said winners were listed in alphabetical order rather than ranked order. The state with the highest number of fan favorite brunch spots was California, where 22 restaurants were recognized. Restaurants with a minimum threshold of diner reviews were considered and evaluated by a compilation of unique data points, including diner ratings, the percentage of five-star reviews, the number of alerts set, the percentage of reservations made in advance, percentage of capacity, and direct searches, the website wrote.
Thank you, Judith. Now let's move on to the articles from the New Bern Sun Journal, the Greenville Daily Reflector, and the Wilmington Star News. And let's begin with this article from the Greenville Daily Reflector. Jason Sugg's doctorate, a chief accomplishment at ECU. East Carolina University's Chief of Police, Jason Sugg, is a second-generation law enforcement officer and a first-generation pirate. Today, he added another ECU degree to his repertoire when he received a doctorate in rhetoric, writing, and professional communication from the Thomas Harriot School of Arts and Sciences, Department of English. He was among more than 4,600 students to graduate during spring commencement. Sugg, a Greene County native who has spent his 26-year career in law enforcement with the ECU Police Department, has served in various roles from police officer to deputy police officer, or deputy police chief, and now chief of police. He also was interim chief at Elizabeth City State University for a short time. He said it was familiar with law enforcement that drove him to the profession originally. After being hired by ECU, Sugg said the development opportunities available at the university attracted him even more, which has led him to pursue a broad arts and sciences education. He earned a Bachelor of Arts in German from the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures, with a minor in history in 2014, and a graduate certificate in professional communication from the Department of English in 2019. Before pursuing his doctoral degree at ECU, he earned a Master of Public Administration from Pennsylvania State University in 2016. "I was interested in branching out into English department programs," he said. "I started with a certificate program and enjoyed that so much that I wanted to continue the work. I was fortunate to be accepted into the rhetoric, writing, and professional communication PhD program, and I had a great time with the subject matter and the work." While taking courses, Sugg said his favorite classes included any taught by Aaron Clark, associate professor of English. He said the discourse analysis course taught by Nikki Caswell, professor of English, was meaningful to him and connected well with his profession. He said professors that were most influential to him included Clark, Caswell, Matt Cox, associate professor of English, Tracy Morse, associate professor of English, Wendy Scherer, distinguished professor of English, and David Smith, associate professor and chair of the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures. These professors and others not listed here are always so open and supportive and gave me every opportunity to develop as a student and a person, he said. Sugg added that the biggest challenge was a non-traditional student is work-life balance. Family comes first, and that isn't always perfect. I also commonly work about 48 hours a week, sometimes more. Sometimes it was difficult to find enough time, Sugg said. I was fortunate to be in a program that understood that and supported my progress as a part-time or half-time student. I also received support from my colleagues. While pursuing his degree, Sugg acquired a new outlook on life and his professional career. I gained much more through understanding of perspective, mediating relationships, and knowledge, particularly about the police role in society. I feel like I enhanced my skills as a researcher, writer, and presenter, and I developed a greater ability to communicate with others, regardless of their background and experiences, he said. Sugg also shared words of wisdom and advice for future ECU students. Set realistic goals and go after them. Knock one down and set another one up. Make sure they are attainable and you will experience success. Some may take time, but keep at it, he said. Be intentional about diversifying your perspectives and experiences, especially in the classroom. Doing that will make you a more comprehensive thinker and give you more worldly insight than you think. Find your life balance and keep an eye on it. After receiving his degree, Sugg will continue working with the ECU Police. He also wants to pursue previous academic projects and publishing opportunities for those topics of interest. beyond ECU, he said he may want to explore fields that relate directly to his degree, combining his professional and academic experiences. ECU has been a place that's afforded me many opportunities to experience diverse ideas, people, and perspectives, he said. The relationships that I've been able to build at ECU are substantial and important to me. It really is a phenomenal place to work and learn. From Snow Hill, Sugg is a member of multiple professional organizations, serves on the Department of Political Science's Master of Public Administration Advisory Board, and has guest lectured in a few of the program's classes. In his free time, he enjoys spending time with his family, watching college sports, exercising, reading, participating in outdoor activities, and traveling. How does he even have free time?
And this from the Greenville Daily Reflector. The headline reads, Fire Tower Donated to City for Art Project. The city of Greenville acquired a 110-foot local landmark this week that has stood watch over the community for nearly 90 years. The city on Monday accepted a donation of the former NC Forest Service watchtower that gave Fire Tower Road its name from Harvey Lewis, owner of the 786-square-foot site, E.R. Lewis Construction Company, and Lewis Land Development. The historic tower is an icon of significant importance to the community, Assistant City Attorney Scott Dixon told the City Council before it accepted the donation. The city was interested in acquiring the property for its significance as a landmark and to be used as part of a city public art project. The details of the art project were not discussed. The property and tower's appraised value is $520,000, Dixon said. The city's only expense is paying for a title search before the exchange is finalized, he said. There was no discussion about possible costs to refurbish the tower built in 1936 by the Civilian Conservation Corps at the intersection of Greenville Boulevard and Evans Street. The Forest Service relocated the tower to its current location in 1966. It was used to spot fires until the 1980s, an official with the service told the Daily Reflector in 2007 when the agency was preparing to move its station to make way for the widening of Fire Tower Road from 2 to 4 lanes. Lewis and his company acquired what was then a 2-acre site at 720 East Fire Tower Road in a land swap that provided the Forest Service with 5 acres at 5601 County Home Road. The tower has stood alone at the site since the Forest Service moved in 2008, while the surrounding Bayswater Road area has seen major development, including an apartment complex, a charter school, a fitness center, and a new city fire station. Councilwoman Marion Blackburn used the occasion to reference an ongoing dispute involving another towering structure in the city. She pointed out the fire tower is 20 feet shorter than the 130-foot flagpole installed on Red Banks Road by a recreational vehicle dealership last summer in violation of city code. The business has since refused to remove the structure, and a large flag that also violates city code. The council on Monday unanimously approved a request to authorize Greenville Utilities Commission to extend sewer services to the proposed Pitt County Industrial Megasite property without requiring voluntary annexation. With the vote, a request to rezone the Weyerhaeuser-owned property from residential agricultural to industrial can be presented to the Pitt County Board of Commissioners. Once an option to purchase the property is secured or the property is purchased outright, the owner can apply for due diligence funding to determine the suit's suitability for industrial development and later site development funding. The property is located in northern Pitt County, west of U.S. 13, NC 11, near Alpine Taylor Road. Briley Road is to the south, and it is divided by Saintville Road. The council also approved a $936,665 professional services contract with Kimley Horn and Associates for the design of drainage improvement and stream restoration on East Fire Tower Road near Paramore Park. A disaster relief mitigation fund grant agreement for $1.5 million between the city and NC Department of Public Safety for the same project also was approved. The money is from a $9.2 million Federal Emergency Management Agency grant awarded the city last September. Blackburn asked if the FEMA grant was in jeopardy due to cuts at the federal level. Director of Engineering Lisa Kirby said the funding for the design project has already been approved and the construction phase funding could be in jeopardy. It's difficult to make plans when you have a project that was scoped, a project that is needed, a project that has ostensibly been funded and suddenly is up in the air, in jeopardy. Not your fault at all. It comes from the federal level, Blackburn said. Kirby said North Carolina has about $2 billion in mitigation funding stemming from Hurricane Helene, when another federal source that can be used statewide. But the city will have to apply for it.
This from the New Bern Sun Journal. A Caribbean holiday on the island of St. Lucia has been offered as a special fundraiser for Arts to End Genocide. The Ballambush Estate in St. Lucia has offered a seven-night stay at their plantation to support the organization's programs in Bamako, Mali, and West Africa, said Mitch Lewis, founder of the New Bern-based nonprofit. Lewis founded Arts to End Genocide to provide a vehicle for American citizens to become proactive and create a dialogue of understanding with African citizens. The organization will host the second annual Global Citizenship Music Festival on May 17th to help spread the organization's mission. Tickets will be available at the festival for a drawing that takes place on June 25th. Tickets are also available online at www.arts2endgenocide.org. The ticket prices are $20 for the chance to win a stay at the Ballambush Estate, with breakfast included, a package value of $2,000. The winner will be responsible for airfare and ground transportation. The historical estate is a family home, retreat venue, and organic farm in St. Lucia, within a 70-acre nature heritage site adjoining two secluded beaches. Six individual and charming cottages are available for guests. The second annual Global Citizenship Music Festival is a free music and dance event hosted in partnership with Faith Connection and the Atlantic Dance Theater by Arts to End Genocide. The festival will feature performances by musicians from cultures represented in the local community and will share songs from Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Included in this year's festival are Los Sabrosos del Son, Solo, Unknown Tongues, Kenya, and Soulful Cities, Sisters. A community choir comprised of singers from many local church choirs will close the program. The festival is scheduled for May 17th from 3 to 8 p.m. at Union Point Park, that's 210 East Front Street in New Bern, will be held light, rain, or shine. Food trucks will be available at the event. Although the second annual Global Citizenship Music Festival is offered free to the community, Arts to End Genocide hopes for the continued support of the community to make voluntarily or monthly donations. All money raised goes directly to the program serving the women and children in the IDP camps in Mali, said Deirdre DeRocher, a member of the Arts to End Genocide Board of Directors. With the support of our community to provide basic food and health services to these vulnerable people, we are showing there are still caring people in the United States who have not abandoned them. Judith?
Also from the New Bern Sun Journal, the headline here reads, Teacher Named to Governor's Advisory Committee. A Craven County teacher has been selected to serve on the newly created Governor's Teacher Advisory Committee. Governor Josh Stein signed an executive order to establish the committee Tuesday on National Teacher Appreciation Day, according to the governor's office. The committee will advise Stein on issues related to education and serve as education ambassadors throughout the state. Christian Martin, an 8th grade English language arts and social studies teacher at H.J. McDonald Middle School, is one of 17 teachers appointed to the committee from across North Carolina. Originally from Winston-Salem, Martin graduated from Appalachian State University with a bachelor's degree in middle grade school education in 2023. Martin, who was in his second year of teaching at H.J. McDonald Middle School, was named Craven County School's Beginning Teacher of the Year in October. Our students are our future, and high-quality teachers make all the difference in their education, Stein said. I'm proud to celebrate teachers this week and all year by calling for raising teacher pay and investing in support staff so teachers can focus on teaching. I am grateful for the teachers who are stepping up as leaders of the Governor's Teaching Advisory Committee, and I look forward to their expertise guiding our state forward. Rachel Candasso, the 2025 NC Teacher of the Year and Chair of the Committee, said public schools are a launch pad to life. Every day, the incredible teachers across our state dedicate themselves to helping their students succeed, giving them the skills they need to be resilient, capable, and ready, she said. In addition to Martin, members of the committee are Rachel Candasso, Chair, Welcome Middle School, Pitt County Schools, Amanda Aguayo, Gravelly Hill Middle School, Orange County School, Taylor Bomar, Grinley Primary School, Mitchell County Schools, Emily Burris, Pisgah High School, Haywood County Schools, Elise Cannon McRae, South Central High, Pitt County Schools, Bobby Kavner, South Point High School, Gaston County Schools, and Summer Epinesa, W.R. Odell Primary School, and Carabas County Schools.
North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher near Wilmington, North Carolina, to expand. This is from the Wilmington Star News. The North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher will undergo a $65 million renovation and expansion. It will close to the public in the fall for renovations, and online reservations are required for the summer season. It's set to expand for the first time in over 20 years. Curie Beach's popular educational and entertaining destination will undergo a $65 million renovation and expansion, according to a news release. The first phase of the multi-year project will launch later in 2025. The facility will close to the public in the fall to make way for this transformation. This project is about more than updating our facilities. It's about moving boldly into the future with a reimagined visitor experience unlike any other in the state, said Hap Fadzinger, director for the North Carolina Aquariums Division. We're creating new dynamic spaces that will educate, connect, and empower our community. The crown jewel of the expansion is the addition of a new shark habitat, which will be the largest in the state. The newly renovated aquarium will also feature an interactive touch pool, live coral reef habitat, state-of-the-art education center with outdoor learning, and a rooftop sky deck. To support the expansion, the NC Aquarium Society launched a funding campaign that garnered $60 million in state funds. The New Hanover Community Endowment also contributed $7.5 million, while the State Employees Credit Union Foundation contributed $2 million. The funds will support renovation efforts at all three NC aquariums and Jeanette's Pier in Nag's Head. With New Hanover property at a premium, what keeps big buildings vacant? New Hanover home buyer value menu. Where to get the most out of your money? I think that's a separate article here. The North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher, is anticipating a busy summer season ahead of renovations. Online reservations are required, and tickets can be purchased on the aquarium's website. It is located at 900 Loggerhead Road in Curie Beach and is open daily from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Children 2 and under get free admission. The aquarium currently features a variety of exhibits, including a 235,000-gallon sand tiger shark habitat, an albino alligator, a bald eagle, a loggerhead sea turtle habitat, and two families of Asian small-clawed otters. Judith.
And next up from the Greenville Daily Reflector, the May 9th community news. RamFest 2025. Worth Products will present the inaugural RamFest from 10 to 4 on Saturday at the Greene County Sports Complex, 342 U.S. 13 Snow Hill. The festival will celebrate the tradition of the Greene Central High School Rams mascot and feature shows, live entertainment, children's activities, and the Elder Abuse Awareness Walk. Visit greencountync.gov/ramfest for more information. Annual Banquet. The Friends of Joyna Library's annual banquet and reception will be held at 5 p.m. on Tuesday in the Janice Hardison Faulkner Gallery on the second floor of Joyner Library at East Carolina University, 1000 East 5th Street Drive. Margaret Bauer will speak about Paul Greene, More Than the Lost Colony. The event is free and open to the public. Contact Charlotte Fitz Daniels at 328-0287 or Fitz Daniels C16 at ecu.edu. Cypress Group. The Cypress Group of the NC Sierra Club will hold its monthly meeting at 7 p.m. on Tuesday at Tapped, 650 East Fire Tower Road. The topic will be biodiversity globally and regionally, what we can do and are doing in Greenville, with guest speaker Jeff McKinnon, ECU Department of Biology professor and Greenville's Environmental Advisory Committee chair. The public is welcome to attend, and admission is free. For more information, contact Mary Altsenser at malsenter at rsnet.org. Trades Demonstration. The Eastern Carolina Village and Farm Museum, 4570 County Home Road, will present a day-long celebration of trades and skills of the 1800s from 9 to 4 on May 17th. 30 costumed interpreters will demonstrate farm life activities like blacksmithing, woodworking, spinning, weaving, candle and soap making, outdoor cooking, and more, ideal for families. Tickets sold at the gate, $10 for ages 12 and over, $5 for ages 6 to 11, and 5 and under are free. Rain or shine. For more information, email ecvafm@gmail.com. Adoption event. Cooper's Cup, 2588 Railroad Street, Winterville, will host an adoption event from 10 to 2 on May 17th for Pit Friends, and Pit Friends will receive 10% of proceeds and have adoptable dogs to meet at the event. Plant Sale. The Pitt County Master Gardener Annual Spring Plant Sale Fundraiser will be held from 10 to noon on May 17th at the Pitt County Arboretum, 403 Government Circle. A preview sale for Friends of the Arboretum will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. and for this event, cash or check only. Chorus Concert. Carolina Chord Connection Barbershop Chorus will present its annual show at 3 p.m. on May 17th at First Christian Church, 2810 East 14th Street. The program also features two professional men's quartets, Let's Sing and Harmony Grits, and a female trio, Gazebo Gals. Donations accepted at the door or at CarolinaChordConnection.com. Spring Revival. Good Hope Free Will Baptist Church at 2506 Mill Street in Winterville will hold its Spring Revival at 7 p.m. May 21st through the 23rd. Guest preacher will be Pastor B. Wayne Wagner from Sand Hill Free Will Baptist Church in Kinston. And finally, Golf Cart Parade. The Winterville Chamber of Commerce, 360 Golf Carts, and the Town of Winterville will hold a golf cart parade on May 24th at the Market Square Lot, 252 Main Street in Winterville. The parade will start at 10 a.m. and local vendors will be available until 2 p.m. Golf carts may be entered for $20. And if you need more information, visit their website, wintervillechamber.com/GCP.
Thank you. Well, with our few minutes we have left, let's look back into some more dates in history. In 1939, American track and field athlete Ralph Boston, the first man to jump more than 27 feet, or 8.23 meters, he was born in Laurel, Mississippi. In 1958, Alfred Hitchcock's psychological thriller Vertigo, starring James Stewart and Kim Novak, premiered in San Francisco and became widely regarded as one of the greatest movies ever. In 1960, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the first birth control pill. In 1974, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee began formal hearings in the impeachment investigation of President Richard M. Nixon. In 1980, the horror film classic Friday the 13th about summer camp counselors being hunted by a masked killer was released in theaters, and its huge success led to a popular franchise. In 2020, American singer and pianist Little Richard, whose hit songs of the mid-1950s were defining moments in the development of rock and roll, died at the age of 87. And you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. This broadcast is generously supported by the Orchid Group at Morgan Stanley, and we do thank them for their contribution. This content of this program is readily available as a podcast after this broadcast by visiting our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-513.